President Trump said the next G7 summit might take place at one of his resorts, as long as Germany and France don't mind sharing a room or providing their own toilet paper.
An American TV anchor has apologized for mocking Prince George for taking ballet lessons. "Too little, too late," said the guard operating the guillotine.
Oh. It's not real. It's okay.
Olive Garden denies the claim that they made contributions to President Trump's re-election campaign. They did not make monetary contributions, but they do admit to providing President Trump with an endless supply of breadsticks.
Mm-hmm. And finally, President Trump denies the report that he suggested stopping a hurricane with a nuclear bomb. That would be ridiculous. He actually suggested stopping a hurricane with an army of flying cyborgs. The Trump report starts now.
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Oh, yes, indeed. Welcome to the Trump Report. I'm Christian Blatt. We've got the whole gang together, joined by the lovely, the talented Scott Moore at the end of the desk.
That makes a lot of sense.
Also lovely, also talented, Tamara Brown.
Hello, how are you?
And wait, the loveliest and most talented, me, Christian Black, but second to me.
Why, thank you.
Chelsea Galicia. So glad that we're all here. Now, everybody watching and everybody on the panel, there's only one more shopping day left. So if you're trying to get donors and trying to buy some poll numbers to get into the next debate, tomorrow's the day. And I hope nobody makes it. I mean, nobody else makes it. Because I just want one.
Yeah.
I don't need two nights. Mm-hmm. You know what? Thank you, Hickenlooper. Thank you for everybody who's gotten out of this race. Anybody else who wants to get out before September 12th, please
do. Now, you're talking about Joe Walsh and whoever he'll be debating, right?
Yeah. No, Joe Walsh that I would like to see debate President Trump is the one from the Eagles. Because, I mean, that would need to be pay-per-view. That Joe Walsh I would vote for president. Because, I mean, you know, his Maserati does 185. So, obviously, that guy knows how to handle a machine. But, in all honesty, look, if you're like me and you only want there to be one debate on September 12th, you might get what you want, because Gravel, Hickenlooper, Inslee, who I forgot was running, and Moulton, who I also forgot was running, Hickenlooper and Gravel, that seems like such a distant memory. So they're out. Somebody else is that. But I think actually, legitimately, people just aren't going to make it. They're not going to drop out of the race. And I wanted to ask you first, Chelsea, what do you think about this idea that I think you need 130,000 donors? Yes. That's not $130,000, because I think that, you know, even for Jay Inslee, who's out of the race, I think he could still get $130,000. Mm-hmm. But you have to be polling above 2%. And the latest poll numbers that we see is about half are in the firm, what we like to call the Blasio country, the 0%. So what do you think about there being some tighter requirements for the next debate?
For the 2% poll?
Yeah, that and the 130,000 donors.
I mean, it seems to make sense, but then I also understand the frustration of some campaigns like Tulsi Gabbard's, who's like one poll away from qualifying, and I think somebody else was just two polls away. And so it can be like, I understand the frustration, and I do think that there would be benefit to having Tulsi Gabbard on the stage. These candidates have gotten a lot to get this far, and I feel like the time that they've gotten on stage so far isn't really enough time to give them a shot, although they have then garnered a lot of media attention, which has allowed them a platform to get their messages out. So I get the, like, let's just have one debate night. I'm on there too. I just, you know, I do feel for the people who are like right on the cusp, but even if they're right on the cusp, is them making the debate stage in September really going to turn things around from them? Like, they're going to come from behind and beat Elizabeth Warren
now?
What could
they be thinking?
Not really. So I think if I had to say, I would say, yes, it sucks if you're close, but no cigar. But really, it's better if we just have the top 10.
Well, the Clintons would prefer we don't talk about cigars, but I do understand your point. But I would think that, I don't know, Tamara, what do you think if they did it on one night, but they actually had two separate debates? It's like you clear the stage and then you have the other gang come out. If they actually had that many. I'm okay. I just don't want to spend two nights watching it. But I guess that, and you know what that would do, actually, is I think one of the debates was 2 hours and 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. We don't need that. 2 hours is okay. You want to go over to 205, that's all right.
No, we want more than 30-second sound bites.
No, I don't. Tamara.
You are not a friend of democracy.
No, I'm not.
Are you going to ask me where all those Inslee votes are going
yes.
at this point? Those mm-hmm. diehard Inslee heads?
Possibly Joe Walsh.
Yeah, those
Inslee. Or Don Henley.
Those Inslee heads are just, they're stumped. They're like, can I be on board with Biden? I don't know. I feel bad for the Inslee heads out there.
Yeah. But, you know, we welcome the Inslee heads, which I think that that's how little support he had, is that he doesn't actually have, like, a nickname for people who
doesn't have something as cool like the Yang Gang.
Yeah, the Yang Gang is great. I mean, not only is it cool, but it rhymes. So
can we, like, pick the nicknames for the followers of the remaining candidates? Like, Kamala doesn't have, like, I want to nickname all of them.
Yeah, no, I think everybody should definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think we have an idea for the jokes next week.
Yeah. But we can't count on Donald Trump to give them nicknames his like first couple of nicknames, just from a nickname standpoint, were pretty good. Crooked Hillary really stuck. But it's like now he's not even.
That wasn't him. That was a whole.
Hey, he ran with it, you know. So he had a team of writers, you know. I mean, Stephen Colbert doesn't write his jokes either. So it's okay. If wherever he got it from, he just ran with it. But now it's like Sleepy Biden. It's like, I mean, Handsy Biden. Get Forgetful Biden. There's way better things that you can go with. So I think we need to turn to our audience in the chat. Please give us some nicknames for some of the candidates, whether it'll be live during this show or if you're watching the archive version. And we would like to share your nicknames for some of the candidates. Scott, do you want 30 people qualifying and then having debates over three nights? You just want more, more, more?
All right. Just as many as you can have.
Okay, that's fair.
No, like Chelsea said, I think you have to draw the line somewhere, and this is where it's at. And the kind of odd thing is that some of those people could come back in October because the polls are still going to go up through, you know, from tomorrow. And so there's a chance that some of the people will be able to come back in that are not eligible for September. So there might be a slight bump up in October. But at this point, you know, you do feel like it's got to get harder and harder for, you know, like a competition. It's got to get harder and harder the closer you get to the primaries, which start in January. So as we start into the fall, you want to make sure that you are starting to call some of the people out. And so it makes sense that we're at that point now where we're gonna have more challenges to be able to stay in the race at this point and to be able to have the ability to be on the same stage. So
I wish one of the candidates would start growing a beard like Justin Turner, like leading up to the big game.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Like just have their ritual.
Well, yeah, and just it's like I'm not going to shave until my candidate's president. So you fast forward like 8 years, and they've still got this like, ZZ Top beard. So one of the candidates who seems to be gaining a lot more attention is Elizabeth Warren, who was obviously popular to begin with, but she's drawing larger crowds, and I'm just wondering if there's anything that anybody here feels like has changed about her. Are people just paying attention? Has her messaging gotten more concise? Is there something that any of you see as different about her? Or is it just maybe the summer's almost over and people are starting to pay attention? I'll ask you first, Chelsea.
Well, I think that the appeal of Elizabeth Warren may be coming from like the spectrum of the top three. We've got Biden, who'd be like the most right on the spectrum. And
sure.
Then you've got Bernie, the most left.
Yeah.
And she would be the moderate, actually.
Well,
if
interesting.
You're looking at that spectrum.
Amongst those three, she is definitely the most moderate. Yeah. But there's not necessarily a lot of rooms where you would consider Elizabeth Warren to be the most moderate.
Very
but amongst
true.
Those three, you're absolutely right.
Yes. And I think that, you know, Bernie and Elizabeth are always like pretty close in most people's minds. I think the only real difference, at least to me, is that Elizabeth Warren calls herself a capitalist, whereas Bernie Sanders calls himself a democratic socialist. And I think that people want to try and fix capitalism rather than overthrow it entirely. And I think that Elizabeth Warren is offering the solutions to that. I've been a bit disappointed because she lists, you know, the topics that are the issues that everybody's talking about, Medicare for all and da-da-da-da. And then she says, and fix our democracy, whereas I think it should be flipped. First, fix democracy, and then we can get to all those things. So that would be my only complaint about her, and same would be true of Bernie. But I think that might be some explanation for why she's gaining more traction. And she's just awesome. If you really listen to her, she sounds really, you know, logical and smart and brilliant. And she doesn't have that sort of angry-ish thing that Bernie's got. But she's saying much of the same things.
So you're saying Bernie's anger, you know, which I think some people find admirable about him is that he's got the fire. I think she has it, but maybe you're saying that she's reined it in a little bit. She's just loud but not angry.
Also, a female candidate can't have that, or they wouldn't even make it this far.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. But what do you think, Tamara, how much of this is that people have actually not only taken a closer look at her, but it's just, you know, Biden's been running around for a little while now, and you're like, oh, I don't feel as good about Joe Biden right now. Do you think there's any part of that of the Warren crowds? You know, I mean, it was 15,000 over the weekend in Seattle, which is the biggest she's had. I mean, those numbers come from the Warren campaign, but you know, there's pictures, and Sean Spicer is not the one who provided the pictures. He's very busy learning how to dance, so we can believe that it's a big crowd. And sorry, so what were you going to say, Tamara?
Well, I heard earlier today on the Lead with Jake Tapper, they were debating because I guess an article came out saying that Elizabeth Warren told her donors that she plans to work with Republicans. She plans to be very moderate at negotiating, and they were debating whether that's going to is she back talking, like is she trying to appeal to conservatives by saying things like that? I think that. I guess she's constantly going to be, like, the people that are trying to turn the Democratic Party on itself are constantly going to use Elizabeth Warren as the pawn in that divorce, the child that's stuck between the two parents of the Democratic Party. Because you could make an argument either way for her that she's very far left or, no, she is more moderate. So, yeah, I don't know where anybody stands in the Democratic Party right now. I do feel like if for people who are a little bit more tuned in and paying attention, they seem to be in favor of Warren. But but then there's also the people who just are going to vote for Biden just because they know that name. And then the people that are going to vote for Bernie just because they want to shake everything up as much as they can. And I don't know.
Scott, how much of it is, do you think it really is that it's hard to know exactly where these candidates are and things because there is a little element of where do you want us to be on that? You know, like where's Trump on that? We're not that. And I'm not saying that, look, a number of them have very clear visions, but sometimes I think it might get lost. I think that a lot of the campaigning is they're going after each other. And there is still a lot of like, remember that none of the 24, 28, 30, 80, 100, whatever it is, none of us are Trump. Do you think that the messaging could be more concise and that might help some of the candidates stand out more?
I think it's difficult to do that because right now, like in a primary, a lot of the candidates are going to try to shift a little bit more to the left because they are trying to get to the core of the Democratic Party to be able to hopefully gain some of those the momentum and then turn it into primary wins. And then they'll have to tack back a little more of the center to try to grab some of those moderates and some of those independents and Republicans who are not happy with Trump. But I think it's been pretty steady over the past several months that we've got like sort of this top five, and it's been with Biden and Warren and Sanders, and then you have Kamala and Mayor Pete, and kind of now Cory Booker's kind of on the edge of that peripheral of that top five. But it seems like it's pretty locked in there, and you know, the momentum may shift back and forth a little bit over the next few months until we really start getting some voting, because once that actually happens, then you're going to start seeing consolidation with people. And I think right now, most Democrats are still shopping. They want to see who's going to be the one that they think is going to be able to not only best beat Donald Trump, but hopefully still align with their values. So I think there has been some interest with Elizabeth Warren lately. Maybe some people that were like, you know, that were going for Biden because he was like the comfortable sweater, and they're like, great. But now they feel, ooh, maybe he's made a couple errors and they're not feeling as comfortable with him
that
anymore.
Sweater's unraveling.
Exactly. It's, so they're looking like, I think kind of what you were saying, Chelsea, it's sort of like she is that middle person with maybe some people that are maybe like, okay, well, Bernie might not get the nomination or whatever. So they're taking a second look at her, and also the same thing with the Biden voters. And then maybe there's a few people from Inslee and you know, Seattle, because he dropped out, and obviously that's his home state. And, you know, that could have been some people that had been in his camp that are like, okay, great, we're going to shift over to her. Because even though, like, Jay Inslee had a very small 0.1%, you know, he wasn't really polling that high, he did kind of go on that environmental, that was his centerpiece on the environment and climate change. And, you know, this is something that Elizabeth Warren is starting to mention more, and I think maybe she's also trying to pick up on some of those voters, because those are, you know, those one-issue voters are very important to a candidate, because sometimes that can drive people to be passionate and vote for that candidate and go out. And as much as we should look for everything, there are a lot of people that are like single, very single-issue, and you have on the Republican side too, on the Second Amendment or abortion or other things like that, where they're going to vote for a particular candidate because they, you know, stand for something. So I think there will be some of that that's going to happen, and she's probably picking up some of those Inslee voters, as well as, you know, people taking a second look at her from Biden and Sanders as well.
And because I periodically like to ask the panel where they think this is at, does everyone else besides me sitting here think that we're at a 0.00% chance that Hillary still gets into this?
Guys, if we don't respond to him, he might move on.
Mm-mm. No, because I'm not convinced. She's very active on Twitter. And, you know, she definitely has the fire. You know, I think that it's hard for her to look at this and go like,
of course.
Yeah, but I'm better than all of them.
Oh, the disdain for Hillary.
No, I mean, she is better. Look, 3 million people voted for her. That didn't vote for Donald Trump. 3 million more people voted for her, is what I meant to say.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's just like, you know, it's like, no, you, I think in general people aren't blown away by a lot of them. Somebody like Elizabeth Warren is able to make headway. And I think that, you know, the reason why I was asking about Biden is that when Biden's in the news, what is it for? It's because he says he's so happy to be back in Vermont. It's so great to see everybody in Vermont. Joe, you're in New Hampshire. Yeah, that's what I meant. But then there's an actual quote from him. I think this was today. No, this was actually Monday, which is yesterday. He said, I want to be clear. I'm not going nuts. See, that doesn't help.
No.
That definitely doesn't help. I'll tell you what that reminds me of.
Yep.
That reminds me of Elizabeth Warren taking that 23andMe test. It was just like, well, no, you're playing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it reminds you of Donald Trump.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm the most stable.
No, yeah, no. It's just like you're going into territory you just shouldn't. I mean, you know, I mean, Elizabeth Warren probably thought that the results were going to be a little different, but it's like, why would you ever take that test? Why is Biden saying this? So it's just like, I don't know. I mean, I think Trump's just laughing at everybody. That's the way I look at it. I mean, you know, obviously he is the most, what was it? The most stable? What was the
stable genius?
Most stable genius. Yeah. And that stable genius is just really hoping to get to debate. Wait, Joe Walsh. And then who's the other guy running?
Weld.
That's never going to happen. He's never debating either of them. He doesn't have to.
No, they're going to no primary.
Right. Exactly. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, just I always want to go on record as saying I'm not convinced that the day before the election in 2020, I still won't be convinced that Hillary doesn't show up and go like, does anybody want to write me in? Just saying.
I would never say never, because I think, you know, obviously she's wanted to be president before Bill was even president. This is something she's always wanted to do, and maybe she'll be like third time's charm.
And maybe she would have been better at it. We don't know. You know, maybe she should have run first.
So that's why I would never say never, because I think that passion is always there, and the fact that it was that close.
It should not have been that close. Yeah.
Right. Probably, you know, obviously kills her. So I think there's a very good chance she would again. I wouldn't even put it past her to try to run again in 2024. Like, as long as she's healthy and able, I don't see that. I could never say 0% chance that she's going to attempt to run. But
I would bet money that she's never going to run again.
Oh, I mean, I'm talking about 2020. She could run in 2024.
That's what I'm saying. She could run in 2024. That's what I'm not going
to
put it past
her. Yeah, you still want to say never.
No, like, never.
I want to say never. Yeah. I want to say never. Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if somebody, like, chose her as a running mate, like, in 2024. I could see that happening.
2024, not 2020.
Mm-hmm. No, interesting. I don't think in 2020 either.
I don't know how old she would baggage. But
yeah, but I
77 in 2024.
I don't know. So should Joe Biden just, I don't know, make less appearances? Should he get more naps? I mean, he certainly shouldn't be saying, hey, everybody, I'm not nuts. Because I think he thinks it's funny. But I do think people are just like, man, I really want to, I want to support him. But it's just every time, every not every day. Every week there were a couple of stories where it's like, oh, Joe, you don't know where you are. And that's easy if you're on the campaign trail.
Right.
But it's magnified when it's Biden who doesn't know where he is. But I don't know. I don't know. would you have any problems supporting Joe Biden were he to be the nominee, or would you just stay home?
No, because if he selects my pick as VP, Mayor Pete, I would feel good about Mayor Pete having to take over.
But what if he selected who's somebody you don't like? Like what if he picked Bill de Blasio as his running mate? Bill de Blasio's crying somewhere. You laughed so hard at the end. Look, he might help you get Staten Island. He's not going to get the other four boroughs. He could carry Staten
I don't think
Island.
It would give you Staten Island either.
There's also too many police officers that live in Staten Island.
In all my days of producing this show, I don't think I've ever seen Scott laugh so hard.
Well, you know, we've been doing this show a long time, Ryan, but actually you're probably right.
Yeah.
So,
I still think with all these mistakes, for most people who are only halfway paying attention,
that's true.
Yeah,
including Joe Biden.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe this is making him resonate with voters more. I mean, I still think that I'm calling it like my second placed dream, because dream would be like Elizabeth Warren and then like a whole government around it that like is of the Elizabeth Warren cloth. But like my reality dream would be Joe Biden, VP is Mayor Pete,
okay,
and Senate Majority Leader Elizabeth Warren.
I like that.
I mean, I could.
I like that.
I could get behind that.
Yeah,
and I could see her being Majority Leader. Obviously, assuming there's more Democrats in the Senate, but wouldn't there? I don't know. I mean, wouldn't there be people that have been around longer? I mean, doesn't Schumer take every breath expecting that one day he's going to be Majority Leader?
I think he does, but
yes. And if you really want to see a passionate Democratic Party, even having Joe Biden as a nominee, you would be saying Elizabeth Warren would be Senate Majority Leader. And then I think that the passion you need to get the top of the ticket would be there, because that big picture of Joe Biden as president, Mayor Pete for VP, and Elizabeth Warren, Senate Majority Leader, that is a picture that could be a rallying, I don't know, cry for people who are, you know, realistic that the country is afraid of change, but then passionate about the fact that somebody of Elizabeth Warren's nature is what we need in the Senate to be driving policy.
Well, I mean, arguably, you know, you're able to affect policy that actually gets passed a lot more if you're the majority leader. If you also have the House.
And really so, dumb question. Who picks the majority leader?
They vote on it, don't they?
The senators?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to vote for her. Yeah. They're going to vote. Look, I'm just saying, who are they going to vote for? Who do career politicians like more than anything else? Other career politicians who look out for their same interests. You know, I think somebody like Chuck Schumer probably came into Washington with all the great ideas. But like anybody, he's just been there for too long, you know?
Right, so, his day has passed.
Yeah. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be excited about your idea. I just think, realistically, it's always like, you know, who are people thinking might be Speaker of the House other than Pelosi? There was a little bit of a rumbling, but everybody kind of knew it was going to be her. Well, yeah, I don't think, not at that point, AOC. Yeah. Now,
Keith
going
Ellison,
forward.
Was that somebody that was up for it? I can't remember.
There wasn't a lot. So it's just like, and I'm not even saying that she isn't the right person for the job with Donald Trump as president. It's just, you know, it's pretty locked into place. And I think that to campaign on something that you can't really promise because, I don't know, Scott, do you, off the top of your head, do you know how many seats Democrats would need to pick up to actually be the majority in the Senate?
Well,
whether you can have a plus or minus two.
Well, I mean, they've got to be able to get at least 50 and then have the Democrat – or 49 and have the, or 50, sorry, and have the Democrats win, so the VP right. could be the deciding vote to give you 51.
Right, well, that's what
Because that happened with Republicans with during George W. Bush, too. It's like you get that one extra
right. person and, with the VP and there's to be usually, the tiebreaker. There's but, usually the one independent, and yeah. it's like, well, who do you caucus with? And then that makes a big difference, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like Angus King in Maine, who always caucuses with the Democrats. But
and
you,
Bernie.
You, and Bernie in Vermont. But you do obviously want the cushion. So, you know, if you were able to get 5 or 6 seats, you'll end right. up being able to get at least
And if you 50, have,
53.
You know, this... The number 2 and 3 in terms of the presidential candidates, two mm-hmm. and three being Warren and Sanders, you have them out campaigning for progressive senatorial candidates. That would carry, I think, a lot of weight because they did so well in the primary for president that we have a chance of not just Democrats taking over the Senate, but having a good army of progressive Democrats in there, which is for me the difference. Because if it's just corporate centrist Democrats mm-hmm. in there, then
right, you need to get the
womp.
I like how we're choosing our fantasy teams right now.
No, but I like the Elizabeth Warren is because I hadn't even thought of her.
So the
in
DNC
that role.
Needs to think out of the box.
I was thinking of her being in a cabinet position or something in policy for an administration. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh,
well,
that's
you can
an
appoint
one.
That, so I yeah. can see that plan being a little yeah. bit more secure, something you can plan on.
Right.
But I do
that's
agree with.
I like that though. That thought
with Tamara's idea that you know you could trade Elizabeth Warren for 2 senators to be named later. You know, I mean, you can actually you know, do some wheeling and dealing and actually make trades. What were you going to say?
So I don't think the name of this game should be that we're just trying to beat Trump.
We
are trying
to get the Senate. That's
we are
so
trying
important.
to install a working, functioning
government
with a conscience. mm-hmm. That's what I would like, and I don't think that we have that now. And I'm frankly not sure we had that before Trump either.
At what point in 243 years of the United States of America do you think we had a government with a conscience? I'm just asking. It's just a simple question because I'm not convinced we've ever had that.
Well, it's just because some things have not happened yet.
This is
doesn't
the time,
mean,
though. No, I mean,
we have moments. We have moments when enough of us said, oh, wait a minute, the slavery thing, not cool. Women not being able to vote, yeah, that's not cool either. So we get
as long as they vote for me, you know, I think that was
the Well, I think there's been more bipartisanship in the past than there is now, and it wasn't such a me versus them and everything they are is wrong and evil and everything I am is right. You know, there was more of that. I'm not saying there wasn't other issues with scandals and you know, inappropriate things through the past, because that's always been there, and that's not just here, that's across the world, but there's definitely been more bipartisanship in
And
the
I
past.
Think this is a wonderful segue to the death of David Koch, who, because of the Koch brothers, especially like around the early 80s, this is when mm-hmm. the conscious, or lack thereof, of corporate America started seeping in and taking over the government to new levels. New heights. I can't even explain the intensity of it.
His death is symbolic of
no
getting
money out of politics.
Public interest out of politics.
Remind me, which one was he? Was he Cherry Coke or Coke Zero? Because it's really hard for me to keep track.
Well, Charles is running Coke Industries and has been for a long time. But the two brothers themselves are the ones who did something, you know, remarkable with this business that they inherited from their father and what they did. I mean, I couldn't explain it in 30 seconds. I don't even know if I could explain it in 30 minutes. I've read a lot, heard a lot documentaries to understand, but what they have done is, I mean, in the worst way of the that you can use the word awesome, it's like just amazing.
No, I mean, you can be impressive what someone accomplishes despite, you know, not believing in what their vision and their message is. I mean, what we talk a lot about on the show, just the fact that Donald Trump became president is shocking, you know, and it's just like, yeah, well, you know, he didn't just go to Wisconsin. I guess he went twice. But the question, of course, the reason why David Koch comes up so much in the news, at least on cable news, because that's, you know, this is the angle they can put on it, was that I'm wondering if anybody here feels that it was okay for Bill Maher to go on TV and say that he was glad that he was dead and they hope it was painful.
Well, if you believe in the First Amendment, it's
right,
okay.
That's what I was going to say.
No, you can say it, but is it fair for there to be the backlash against HBO that there is, because, you know, it's just like, you don't even like the guy, but...
it's that we always go back to the question, like, with Trump in the office setting the precedent of how people... I was about to say politicians can talk, but Bill Maher's not a politician, but what the public can say...
Yeah,
it's like all bets are off.
I mean, look, he's a comedian; he should be able to say what
he
wants.
What I'm saying.
It's just you got to stand by it, and then HBO, of course, is it's part of Time Warner. So anything that happens,
AT&T.
Yeah, and and he famously lost his job with Disney owned ABC because of what he said. You know, so I think that he is somebody that if you give him a check. He might say something. He's definitely going to say something. I mean, and by the way, people forget that he called himself a house N-word not that long ago. You know, he's really making a lot of trouble.
People forget that.
It doesn't come up that much. Put it this way. They forgot about it in the way where he still has a show. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
well,
that's
I think
true.
The difference between ABC and HBO is also...
Yeah,
a big difference than having it on a channel that anyone can watch versus a paid subscription channel where you know you're going to be edgier. And they know... when they bought, into Bill Maher, is that they're buying into someone who's going to be, as a comedian is going to be edgy and is going to say things that are going to be inappropriate. And so, yeah, I think it comes with the territory with his job, and it's going to be expected. And obviously people are going to be with the backlash, because that's the society we are now with social media and everything, that people are going to find something to complain about. And so it is what it is. I mean,
show was called politically incorrect.
Incorrect. Yeah. You know what you're getting when you're watching it. You're not going for somebody that's going to sugarcoat issues, and you're going to go with someone who's going to be
edgy. Not like some people weren't thinking it. Even people who would never say it.
Lots of people said it online and on social media anyway, so it's not like he's the only one that said that. He just has a bigger platform to be able to say it. That's all.
And it's commendable that Bernie would say, hey guys, let's not chant yay for his death.
Yeah, I did want to bring that up, actually.
Yeah.
Because there's no positive yield for Bernie for being like, oh, let's just let that happen.
But I think that the American public is well served to know that this was a very controversial figure and why to look into that. And can we hopefully just put a rest to the days where somebody was a good person because they gave millions of dollars to hospitals and stuff? Giving money to organizations, meanwhile, doing a whole host of evil things
doesn't negate it, and also you're giving money and you have billions of dollars, so there's a little bit of a difference with that too.
And how of dollars,
I
just am not. I'm not really for it. Someone who gives money to charity automatically a good person?
I don't think you have to say that someone's great when they die, but I also think that sometimes you don't need to like literally dance on their grave. I mean, something that I've talked about on this show occasionally. Is that I was really good friends with Andrew Breitbart, and I know what that website is now. But he was at my wedding. He's one of my favorite people I ever knew in my life. And Rolling Stone, the day he died, had an article called Death of a Douche. And I'm like, I'm sure that felt really good for Matt Taibbi. I always remember who wrote it. I'm sure that felt so good for him to write that. But it's just like, he's a guy with four kids, and it's just like, did you have to write that? And so that's why I'm probably more sensitive. No, I don't care anything about either of the Koch brothers, but I just like, do you need to say it just because you can? And that's where I come down on that.
If that's what gets the American public talking about what this guy did, then I'm okay with it. I mean, I guess I don't feel badly enough for his family. I wish his family, David Koch's family, would have said, hey guys, what you're doing is so wrong, but they didn't, or not loudly enough. So I don't know. I guess I don't feel that we should stifle our criticism because they're going through something very painful when what these people have done has been really detrimental to our whole country. And I say this knowing that, a whole country isn't determined by what a couple of people do. It's more about the system. But they helped create this system.
They did, of where it is now.
That, you know, we there was some article that you, that 70% of people are upset with political, the political climate,
well, I think
political
it was,
culture.
70% of, I believe it was millennials, because polls always like to blame them for things.
But millennials, but, people are upset about the political climate and the stalemate, really, of Congress.
Yeah, let me just say what the headline is. Poll finds millennials value patriotism, religion, and having children far less than previous generations. Oh, no, you're right. 70% of Americans are angry about the political climate.
And so, how did we get this political climate? In part due to what the Koch brothers have done to politics.
And I would just add that if you're a person that's in the limelight, regardless of who that is, or a person that's giving hundreds of millions, yeah, billion dollars to causes and everything, then you have to be understood that you're going to be criticized for that. And when you die, you're going to be criticized. And again, First Amendment right is that you're going to do that. And if you or your family don't feel comfortable with that, then maybe you shouldn't be donating that money or be in the limelight doing whatever you're doing. So it comes with the territory.
Yeah, Warren Buffett, step back.
It does. It comes with the territory. So whoever you are, if you're donating money to certain causes and it's a lot of money and you're doing things that are making big changes to the political system, if you're, you know, working for a particular, you know, political organization or something, you know that that's going to come with the territory. And if you don't, then you shouldn't be in it.
Well, we can certainly have differences of opinion on that, but I think that the one thing that we can probably all agree upon is that the best way to stop a hurricane is with a nuclear bomb.
Yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with the science there, and I'm glad that we're finally talking about it, because it just seems like it seems like kind of a no-brainer. I mean, it's just like, oh, the hurricane's coming. I know how to stop it. Let's just drop the mother of all bombs.
Yeah, right? Let me ask a very Republican question. Where are we going to get the money for that?
Don't we have so many nuclear bombs just lying around that we can just use now?
Think about how much money we would save on giving paper towels to hurricane victims if we instead were to nuke the hurricane.
Nuke the hurricane.
Save the billions of dollars.
What we'd save from FEMA.
Yeah.
Oh, so wait, the nuke would kill the people? Well, that's going to save a lot of money anyway. So do you think that that's what Trump meant? Also, I believe there's no recording of him saying this. So this is just something that we're getting. But
hearsay, if you will.
It's hearsay, but I don't know. Just anybody in the chat, anybody in the panel, does he find it hard to believe? And that if he said it, it wasn't like a, we should just throw a bomb in there. You know, well, like, I don't think it, I think if
I
he did say,
he
no, don't say.
Kind of humor.
No, he doesn't.
It was one article. Here's the thing, is that it speaks to who our president is. Anybody else, Republican or Democrat, in the history that something this ridiculous was one news source reported something this ridiculous about them, whether you hated that president or were on board in favor of him, you'd be like, that's insane.
Yeah. He wouldn't
but the
have said
fact
that. Yeah.
that this sounds reasonable,
yes.
that everybody thinks that you're giving credit to something that is so, you know, I think that speaks volumes, the fact that...
It does. I agree. And the fact that he had to tweet about it multiple times now also makes me think that it really did happen. Because
that's his own I'm not going nuts
exactly.
thing.
Exactly. Because if he didn't, if he had to keep repeating it, then to me, I'm like, he did probably say it then.
I mean, I think we should confirm if that was true or not. And then we should all get behind Scaramucci again, trying to rally all of the cabinet members to getting, what did they say, to take him to Walter Reed and to, you know...
Well,
like Rick Wilson even said, too, it's like, yeah, he should be going to, you know,
pulling
a
the 25th
home.
Amendment.
Yes,
yeah.
He really should.
Well, I mean, I guess if he did say that, you'd have a case. But I feel like there's enough things that, you know, he said where, you know, you can ask those questions. So but
I mean, what do you think would happen first? Impeachment or the cabinet?
25th.
Yeah. Or the 25th.
I think you need to get too many people on board for the 25th Amendment. And I think, like, impeachment, it's still a lot of people. But
like,
I think you could convince that number easier
than
you
can. A majority of cabinet members? I don't know. Is there an exact number? Or is it all of them?
But there's so many acting members
I was
now
just
too.
About to
so
say that there aren't enough actual cabinet members.
Well, there should be, like, three. So maybe that's it'll be easier since there's...
How many more Trumps are there that haven't been appointed to an office yet? Yeah. I think he just needs to
extend
to Tiffany
still hasn't been appointed to anything. But she's
probably
a Maples.
Got some cousins.
Yeah, his sister retired.
Sisters.
He should probably get her back and doing something.
A story that most people know is going on. The rainforest is on fire, and the G7 said, you know, we'd really like to help Brazil, and Brazil said, no thanks, we don't want your money, because it was directed at. Yes, I'm going to say it this way. Macron made sure wants Macron to take back some insults, even though. And this is great because this is the world we live in. This story doesn't involve Trump at all, but it sounds like it does because the Brasilia Bolsonaro. Yeah, I knew I was putting an extra vowel in there. Bolsonaro is basically saying, like, well, you need to apologize for what you said, and I'm not going to apologize for insulting your wife. So it's like, yeah, that's where this is at. So it's like, you know, and I think Canada said that they would send like $15 million worth of planes just to drop some water
on
it.
Leonardo DiCaprio offered $5 million.
$5 million? Mm-hmm. Really? I mean, so that was like his per diem on Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That's nice. But $5 million is $5 million. Good for you, Leo. You know what? We shouldn't be looking to Jack from Titanic to solve all of our problems.
It's kind of symbolic. I mean, the thing is that if this goes down, we all go down with it. And all this other bickering we have about other issues besides the climate is just rearranging... What is it? Chairs on the deck of the Titanic. Yeah. So actually, I think that makes him even more qualified.
So Leo is the one who should swoop in and put out all the fires.
Well, not himself, but I think he's a good symbolic figure to what will happen if we don't fix this. But I thought that I was a little bit confused because I saw that this was some, like, you know, personal tiff about insulting wives. And then I heard, who was it that said, we're not taking this money because when one country tries to help another country, they're really doing it for some other ulterior motive.
Well, that was like the strings attached. I think that was what I had read about.
Right. And I mean, he also
said this by saying, you know.
Yeah, he also said, like, why don't you just worry about your own, I think he said, like, colonialist interests, you know. So it's like, don't worry about us, you know.
Which is a good example of what happens if the whole world were to take on the America first mentality, meaning their own country first. If it's every country for itself, then we're all going to go down because we're way too interrelated to be able to all look out for ourselves and not have this whole thing go down.
Yep.
So... the rainforest is still on fire last time we checked. The Amazon's not just the rainforest. So, and
sub-Sahara Africa desert where planes are on fire too. It's bigger than the Amazon.
What?
Now, would it, let me just ask this question. I think this is a really important question. Would we be able to put out the fire if we dropped a nuclear bomb on the Amazon? Would that put out the fire?
Good idea, Christian. Let's get that out. Let's get that out. Everybody watching in the chat room, let's tell all your relatives. Let's get that out there.
Or if you use it, the nuclear bomb, on the hurricane, can you divert the hurricane so that it goes over the Amazon? Look, I'm just trying to solve problems here. Clearly France isn't going to be able to help Brazil here. Let me help you. I'm just thinking outside of the box. And... maybe by next week we'll be talking about how, well, you know what? I can't believe they did it, but they did figure out how to nuke that hurricane right over to the rainforest.
I will say,
you're welcome, Brazil.
I think Macron actually has a better strategy, and that might be to hurt Brazil economically by telling Europeans that we need to stop importing soy from Brazil because the soy beans from Brazil are... are part of the reason why that the deforestation is happening. Mm-hmm. So if we stopped buying meat, cattle in particular, soy, I can't remember what else we get from there, that the
carnival the beads, reason, you know, I mean, that's
which is the
one,
reason for why. But then I heard that part of the reason is because China, since they're not getting soybeans from America, now getting soybeans from Brazil, causing the need for them to have more land to grow them, which is therefore causing destruction of the rainforest. See, I don't know if that's exactly true, but it's conceivable that we are way more interconnected, than we want to think, and why America first and is a silly idea, because we can't have our country be first to the detriment of everybody else and think that we're going to have a decent world to live in.
Well, let me pitch you on something, Chelsea. What about America second? Is that going to be okay?
Why do... That's just...
No, it's not first. It's not first, but it's second. Can we at least keep America in mind?
No.
Can we not have, like, America 30th?
No, I think... why do we need this, like, hierarchy of who's first and second? Why not just, like, have a notion of, like, win-win? Where, yes, we want to make deals and have, you know, a strong economy and all, but we're not going to do that to the severe detriment of other people, because those consequences are, if you want to look at it for selfish reasons, going to come back and bite you later.
I think Chelsea's saying America leading from behind, like Machiavelli.
I mean, we're certainly behind in so many ways. So why don't we lead from behind? We only have a couple more minutes. And President Trump said that next year for the G7, he wants his friend Putin to be there. Tamara, that's a good idea, right?
Oh, yeah.
I don't see what would be wrong with that.
All the other leaders are nuts if they didn't hop on board with Trump's proposition. I heard how, like, irritating he was that he just kept bringing it up at every opportunity.
You know who should be here.
And I think part of that was probably because whatever topics they were discussing, he didn't have anything else to add to the conversation. So.
Yeah, we didn't see it with this one, but it was it a year or 2 years ago? I forget exactly when it was, but there was that summit where everybody was talking, but Trump was just standing in the middle of the room by himself because no one wanted to talk to him. I think that now they're like, oh, we should talk to him a little bit, but it's almost like when you talk to a kid at dinner. And what do you think about them? That's a really good idea.
Who was it that said talking to this 70-ish-year-old man is like talking to a 7-year-old? Somebody, I think that was probably
Ivanka, because she does talk to a 7-year-old. So she talks to both, like, very often. So she probably has.
I didn't hear that so much as that he was saying that China is called because they want to do a deal.
Yeah, they do want to do a deal. It's what he says. Yeah. I don't think China says that.
Exactly. They said it didn't happen.
They're like, no, mm-hmm. we don't even have the phone plugged in. I don't know what he's talking about.
What this means, everybody, is that you should do your Christmas shopping now. Because if you wait until December 15th, it's probably going to be more expensive. Mm-hmm. So maybe we should move Black Friday up to, like, Halloween.
December 15th. I mean, I assume you're talking about December 24th at, like, 7 p.m. when most of us do our Christmas shopping.
Well, right? I mean, this is where procrastination is really going to bite you in the bum, mm-hmm. because another round of tariffs will be in place December 15th.
But who knows how the economy will be by then either.
Well, I'm sure that it's going to be the best economy. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have no reason to think that. And I think that if there's anything that Trump is worried about, it's the economy, because at least his narrative to his voters is that the economy is great. And when everybody else starts saying, like, you know, because now some people are saying it's not. But if everyone's saying that it's not, then he's like, well, what else do I have? Well, yeah, I have that wall that I built.
I don't have that wall that I built.
And people are starting to see the cracks in this facade of a strong economy, even in Trump country. Those companies are shutting down. Mines are closed.
Farmers are
and it's true.
Filing for bankruptcy.
It doesn't have to be a recession across the country. You know, there's different things where it could be a recession in each state because of the different needs and different things going on. So you could have a micro recession in some of these states that could be very important for him in his reelection. And, you know, I think if and I was just going to say, with the G7, if he decides to invite Putin over, I think the rest of the country's leaders should say, no, I'm not showing up. That would be really inappropriate. I don't think he would even do that.
We'll have a different meeting.
The G2.
Yeah.
But, you know, what you were saying about Trump, look, at least he still has his looks. Anyway, we are out of time now. But thanks to everybody who was in the chat. Thanks to our wonderful all-star panel. Chelsea, where do people find you?
At Chelsea Glacia.
Tamara?
Hey, Tamara _ on Twitter.
And Scott?
At SMan80, that's SMan80.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at ChristianDMZ. We will be back next Tuesday at 4 Pacific. Yes, that is 7 Eastern. Until then, have a good one, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Our founder, Kevin Undergaro, and me, Maria Menounos, would like to thank you for tuning in to AfterBuzz TV. Remember, we're not just the first, we're the biggest in the world, and we're the only destination for all your favorite TV shows. Whatever you crave, we've got it. So go to AfterBuzzTV.com and check out our lineup. Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principal.